time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip, but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go! Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Turn it up.
Indeed, indeed, it is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are once again here live on Blog Talk Radio, representing Pancakes and Power Slams, ladies and gentlemen. We are episode 87, ladies and gentlemen, continuing to be the hottest late night Tuesday television, soon to be one of these days, radio show on the planet. And we are here once again continuing to please the ears of the wrestling fans by talking about the hottest, most exciting, most interactive wrestling that anyone could ever talk about on Tuesday nights. And of course, I am here with the esteemed Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent, Derek. I'm here with Derek, our esteemed Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent, who just somehow hibernated on me. But he's here. I don't know where he is, but he's here. But anyways, we'll get him on the line. As far as the roundtable is concerned, we're going to debut the pay-per-view roundtable for Survivor Series, but it's going to be delayed simply because we'll get to the Survivor Series commentary here in a minute, but just really no need for it because it was just really a waste of time, and we'll go ahead and save that debut for another time. So whenever Derek's on the line, he looks like there's a bit of difficulties going on here, but we'll get to Survivor Series, Raw, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling, ROH, time permitting. Flavor of the week this week is none other than we're going to talk about some tag teams from the Attitude Era. Now, the Attitude Era is one of the most popular eras in professional wrestling history, and so Derek and I are going to have our own five specific teams. This isn't necessarily the best teams, but these are just teams that we wanted to highlight for the flavor of the week as far as the Attitude Era and the teams that really helped out the Attitude Era. So we're going to talk about that and have a bunch of fun with that. 347-884-8452 is the number to call. See the chat room. I see the chat room starting to fill up here. And tweet at Crave Wrestling for any type of we'll be getting into the trivia here soon as well. Again, 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. Go into the chat room live, and we also have some fun with trivia. Speaking of trivia, The first trivia question is, what year did the AWA disband? What year did the AWA disband? And hopefully we
Power
can
Slam.
There we go. There's Derek, our pair of cakes of Power Slams correspondent.
What's the problem with your transmission? Come on, people. Let's get this going. In our office,
yeah.
People.
Yeah. Good to hear you. And
this is the 87th episode. What pay-per-view debuted in 1987 in the WWE?
That would be the pay-per-view that we're about to talk about shortly. That would be the Survivor Series.
Exactly. Pancakes and Power Slams, brought to you by Chris Featherstone. And the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent, Derek, I'm here on location. If the transmission is a little bit horrible, bear with us. You always have Chris Featherstone here if I fade in and out. Sorry about everyone's luck, but that's the way it is when I'm on the road. So let's keep this thing going. This is Pancakes and Power Slams, 347-884-8452.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm pleased to be here at the Pancakes and Power Slam studio. We're going to have a great time, and we're going to try to squeeze all of this in as much as possible because we actually got SummerSlam to add to the show today. Excuse me, we have Survivor Series to add to the show today as well. However, there's not much to say about Survivor Series. I really don't. Like I said, the roundtable was supposed to debut today, but we're going to save that for a more hyped, more exciting, more satisfying pay-per-view, because Survivor Series, we'll talk about it all, but honestly, there was just one defining moment in the Survivor Series, the entire Survivor Series. And mind you, Survivor Series is the second oldest pay-per-view in WWE history since 1987, and you've had traditional match, tag team match after traditional tag team match. You've had the Big Show winning his first title at Survivor Series. You've had a WWE title at Survivor Series. The Rock winning his first WWE title at Survivor Series. However, 2013, what a disappointment. And let's start off with the first trivia question of the night. What year did the AWA disband? What year did the AWA disband? You can say the answer on the chat room or tweet live at Crave Wrestling, or call in if you think you're bold enough to say it live in front of the entire world. 347-884-8452. What's that?
I just said
you
19.
Guessed? Are you guessing?
No, I'm not guessing it. No, I'm not allowed. I'm not tweeting or I'm not in the chat room.
So. You're not allowed yet.
Yeah,
all right,
I
so
didn't
let's.
Think
so. No. I know that you be just chopping at the bit.
All right, chat room. Let's do it.
Yes,
let's get
absolutely.
Get this going. Get the answer,
what
Twitter. Come on.
Because what'll happen is if you don't do it in time, Derek could just blurt it out. So. Here we go. We'll start off with the pre-show. Miz defeats Kofi Kingston. What was interesting about this match is, and what I saw on Raw as well, is that on last Raw, a week ago, it seemed like we were getting a full Miz turn, a full Miz heel turn. Then they start promoting his little whatever movie on ABC Family and trying to shake Kofi Kingston's hand, and so then he wins at the pre-show, and it didn't really seem as if he was doing a full turn, which makes it really weird to me. I really think that if they're going to go with the Miz, they need to turn him fully heel, because this partial heel turn, it doesn't add, I mean, it brings some type of concentration to the Miz for, I guess, more than when he was just a full-fledged babyface. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't amount to anything, because The Miz will still be low on the pecking order, and he still wouldn't have much to feud with. And I keep saying this, and I was telling my colleagues that when we were watching Survivor Series, I would be okay with a Miz versus John Cena match for the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania 30. However, similar to the main event at WrestleMania 27 for the WWE title, but this one would be for the World Heavyweight Championship, and it wouldn't be the main event. But with this pseudo unification thing that they're doing, and we'll talk a little bit more. We'll talk more in depth about it on Raw. I don't think. We'll talk about the unification a little bit more, but it seems as if it makes it even worse for the Damian Sandows, the Dolph Ziggler's, the Rey Mysterio's, the Miz's, even people like the, you know, Mark Henry's and the Biggie Langston's and people of that sort. If that World Heavyweight Championship goes, that's going to be a career killer for a number of Alberto Del Rio is another one of those people. That's going to be a career killer for a number of people because the thing is, I can see Damian Sandow or Dolph Ziggler as a World Heavyweight Champion, but not a WWE champ. So Miz will definitely be one of those people. And so by him just beating Kofi Kingston, it really didn't mean anything.
Yeah, it didn't really mean a whole lot. And I kind of like your, you know, what if are they going to unify the championships, or are they just going to, you know, kind of like what happened with the Intercontinental Championship against Warrior and Hulk Hogan back in WrestleMania 6? Are they going to unify it, or are they just going to have one of it be vacant and somebody else can grab it? I kind of hope that's what happens, but I'm not sure if WWE never has the best intentions for it sometimes, so. But, I mean, that's a great analogy, and I could see someone like Miz or somebody just needs to hold on to their hopes of being a world champion. It's kind of like a stepping stone to be the WWE champion, but I don't think it's going to happen. They need to keep that championship in place. So kudos to that. What's next?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Again, what year did the AWA disband? I'm going to ask one more time. Chat room, where are you at? Twitter, where are you at? I'm going to ask one more time. And then Derek is going to take over the reins. And the
why don't I just save everyone the embarrassment? I'll just answer it, and then you can go on to the new trivia question.
We'll do this match, and we'll do the next match on the Survivor Series card. And if nobody gives the correct answer or a correct tweet by then I'll go ahead and let you say the results. But until then, we'll talk about the traditional 5-on-5 Survivor Series match. We had the Shield and the Real Americans against Rey Mysterio and the Rhodes Brothers and the Mysterio, the Rhodes Brothers, and the Usos. I'll tell you what, this was the highlight of the entire show. Without a question. This absolutely showed the potential of Roman Reigns. Now, there's been a bunch of different types of rumors going on with Roman Reigns. One of the biggest rumors is that he'll be turning babyface here soon. And we kind of saw it with some animosity throughout the weeks with Dean Ambrose kind of favoring him and Seth Rollins, but not so much Roman Reigns. However, it seems like they've been kind of dying down on that recently, as of late. But I'll tell you what, Roman Reigns, whether he breaks off as a face or a heel, this guy has a ton of potential. And he is just a red-hot superstar right now. He's with the Rhodes Brothers and the Usos, and as far as just really hot tickets right now in the WWE. And Roman Reigns, I tell you, he's got a ton of potential. And many people were saying that he may be one of the maybe the Shield member who gets the short end of the stick. And I never said that. I never agreed with that. To be honest with you, I think the short end of the stick is going to go to Seth Rollins, because when the Shield breaks up, I akin Seth Rollins to the Evan Bournes and the Tyson Kidds of the WWE, just and the Kofi Kingstons, high flyers, great wrestlers, great spots. But that's about it. We're not going to see anything else. And as far as Ambrose is concerned, I've said this before. Derek has worked with Dean Ambrose, so he personally knows how good of a wrestler he is. But I'm going to tell you what, in my opinion, I don't see Ambrose anything more than a mid-carder, maybe an upper mid-carder. He just doesn't have the WWE touch all the way to become a main eventer. I liken him to Jake Roberts and Brian Pillman, mid-carder, good upper mid-carders, very good, both Hall of Famers, great minds in the ring, great wrestlers, but not that main event touch. I would say that Jake Roberts had way more of a main event touch than Brian Pillman, although I think Brian Pillman was a great character and a great wrestler. Roberts had more of a main event touch because he worked with bigger names. He worked with Andre. He worked with Warrior. He worked with Taker. He worked with Hogan. And really, Brian Pillman just worked with Steve Austin. That's really the biggest name that he worked with. And he aligned himself with, of course, Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation. But I do think that Dean Ambrose has that type of feel to him, which won't propel him to the main event. But Roman Reigns, he has it. He has the electricity. He wrestles, you know, he's cousins with The Rock. A lot of people compare him to The Rock as far as a heel that, you know, someone who really established himself as a heel and turned face and got really over. I don't see Roman Reigns having anywhere close to the mic work The Rock had. But as far as ability is concerned in ring, I already see Roman Reigns being better than Rock in that regard. So I really think with Roman Reigns being the sole survivor, matching a Survivor Series record by eliminating four people, that spear is just killer. It looks fantastic and crisp. They cannot mess up on the rise of Roman Reigns.
They can't mess up on that, and I agree with that. As far as the Shield and their individual talent goes, I still think it's a little, I don't want to say too early, but they have all three members. They all have futures in the WWE. If they were to split from the Shield, I mean, I think they'll be okay. Whether or not, you know, I see your opinion. I think that's awesome. I want to get to the match last night as far as, you know, Goldust just, to me, he stole the show. He did not win the Survivor Series Classic match, but he was awesome with this up on the turnbuckle. He was hitting the knocking him out. Then he went to rub his chest, did the classic, ooh, Goldust. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. It was an awesome match. I agree with that totally. And the Shield has come a long way from what they were a few weeks ago and a couple months ago. They have really kind of spawned into their own thing, and I was getting lost with them. A lot of people, I believe, are getting lost with them, so they've really come back into form. I believe in the Shield and what they can do and the individual talent goes. They all have something to show, and when they do split, I don't really want to see that happen anytime soon, but when they do split, it's going to be sweet for all three.
And I definitely understand and see why you wouldn't want them to split soon. Because, you know, with the resurgence of the Shield, and they definitely have resurged in the past few weeks, It's kind of like a if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of mentality, which I would agree with. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, especially what we see with the Shield now. It's a revived, it's a rejuvenated, it's a resurged Shield. However, I think that Ambrose needs to drop the title without question. He hardly ever defended it. He's probably defended the title. As a matter of fact, I'm going to have the Crave Wrestling staff look at that as far as the number of times that Dean Ambrose have defended the title. And I really don't think that him having the U.S. title would help anything. It's not helping. And the Shield without titles just kind of being a rebel group again would definitely help. And we're seeing, and we saw that. We saw that with Monday kind of pulled a shock on us, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I think that it would make more sense if Ambrose just didn't carry that title without defending it at all. So, well, Derek, no correct answers.
1990.
You are incorrect.
91.
There you go.
1991 is when they lost their contract with ESPN in 1990.
Yeah, and they disbanded a year later in 1991. Pretty much, and I'll tell you what is, and then 91 is when ESPN picked up GWF, Global Wrestling Federation. So clearly ESPN was favoring wrestling programs, and I definitely think that I still wonder at this point right now if it would be cool to see a wrestling program on ESPN. It would be something pretty interesting to see if they would pick up. You don't think so?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, what they got, the Sports Center and all these other shows, I mean, they constantly cover NBA, NFL, baseball when it's in season. I mean, I couldn't see wrestling being them even dedicating an hour to a wrestling show. I just don't see it. Which is a shame. That sucks. But
yeah.
I mean, who would they show other than WWE, TNA? Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor. That would be great. ESPN needs to pick up Ring of Honor.
I totally agree.
Excellent.
I think Ring of Honor ESPN would eclipse GWF and AWA any day. That would be fantastic for Ring of Honor, because they, you know, they got purchased by SVG, the Sinclair Broadcasting Group, which owns a lot of affiliates, Fox affiliates, and things like that. But still, even with those channels, they're not getting good spots, and the production of Ring of Honor is absolutely horrible, especially for an 11-year wrestling company. They share the same birth year as TNA, and now TNA isn't something to boast about. Their production isn't too bad, and they're on Spike TV. That's one of the biggest. That's one of the biggest 18 to 34 demographic channels in all of TV. So you got a good channel, and you know the sound and the television production actually is pretty good. You know, for a number two or a non WWE wrestling company, but ROH is no way. I mean, talk about your back alleys and your banquet halls and things of that nature.
It still looks so independent.
It's exactly right. It looks very, very independent, and that's just not a competitive company. I know that ECW somehow managed to successfully do it, having the independent look, having it at the Hammerstein Ballroom, ECW Arena, you know, traveling the Northeast territories. I understand that, and it worked just because of the kind of shoot style, blurring reality and kayfabe type of feel that they had. But, of course, nothing would be compared to ECW and the type of product that they had and how it was so edgy. That's just not going to happen no more. There's not going to be any television stations that are going to show that. That's why ECW, I remember when, you know, here we live in a town in Ohio, and in Sports Time Ohio, they used to show ECW. And it came on at like 2 o'clock in the morning, like Saturday night, Sunday morning. It came on at 2 o'clock in the morning, and this is in the mid to late 90s, when of course DVR wasn't even, you know, thought about. And there would just be times where I would do my best, and a lot of times I would. That's when I started following ECW. I would stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning. And I would either – it was two options. Either I would put a tape in the VHS and have it for 2 o'clock in the morning, or I would just be forced to stay up and watch ECW. And that's what we got. Eventually they moved to TNN, and they got, you know, which is now Spike TV, so they got them a good network. But they had to tone down the product, and people just weren't interested. So Ring of Honor has the wrestling they have, and I keep saying this. I've been to a live ROH show. We've had Caprice Coleman from ROH, who, speaking of Caprice Coleman, we'll, if I mention his name again, we'll get to him as far as his lack of follow-up. But ROH, you know, I've been to a live show. I've talked to Rhino, you know, live in ROH. I've talked to, you know, Carino and Jimmy Jacobs and all them. And I've had a chance to talk to them, talk to Cliff Compton. He actually endorsed one of my Bleacher Report articles and sent me a message on my Crave Wrestling and Crave Wrestling email. People don't know who Cliff. Well, many people know who Cliff Compton is. He also was known as Domino on WWE for the Deuce and Domino team. But yeah, I've talked to those people from ROH, and you know they love the whole, you know, intimate crowd. But at the end of the day, I mean, you're going to want some television production, so. I definitely
you
think
get paid.
That you do. You absolutely do. You want to get bigger salaries because you have a better endorsement. You have a better network to work with. You have more money coming in from pay-per-view buys, and the list goes on. And as far as the network, the weekly television shows, you want that.
Time in,
so.
You paid your dues. I mean,
absolutely. And
comes
and the
down
thing
to brass
is,
tacks. That's what it is.
Absolutely, and the thing is with the ROH, and I'll keep saying this, with the ROH pool of wrestlers, ROH has the best pool of wrestlers in American television, period. I think that the WWE, you know, has their decent share of wrestlers. TNA has a really good talent pool, but a huge chunk of ROH's talent pool, of TNA's talent pool came from ROH. I mean, you've got your Samoa Joe, ROH, Christopher Daniels, ROH, Austin Aries, ROH, AJ Styles, ROH. And so you have, you know, your bread and butter people from TNA, you know, they're from ROH. And so there's your, you know, there's your proof that ROH can put on a good product successfully, but they just need better production. So we're going on to the next match of Biggie Langston defeating Curtis Axel. And before I go there, I'm going to ask another trivia question. That is, who is the longest reigning United States champion in the WWE? Not the WCW. Who was the longest reigning United States champion in the WWE? Biggie Langston defeats Curtis Axel. I mean, I'm a big Biggie Langston fan, and people know. But that match just wasn't nothing much to talk about. It wasn't very exciting whatsoever. And it seems as if they are doing this, but they're just kind of fading Curtis Axel out. And that's exactly what should happen. I mean, it was a failed project. I didn't see money in it in the first place. And when he was paired with Paul Heyman, I thought it was absolutely odd. It didn't work. People didn't buy it. And it's just a failed project.
It was a horribly failed project. You know, they are phasing out Curtis Axel. The best thing that happened before that match even took place, that overshadowed the match for me, was I was listening to Jerry the King Lawler talking. I don't know if anyone else picked up on this. If you have, please comment 347-884-8452. Lawler says they were talking about Andy Kaufman. And if people remember, Andy Kaufman back in the early 80s had a big feud with Jerry the King Lawler down in Memphis, Mid-South. But Lawler says, hey, do you really want to see Andy Kaufman? Everyone's like, well, yeah, sure. And he's like, well, you better get a shovel and a flashlight. I mean,
wow.
I heard that, and what was this? That, yeah, Curtis Axel faced Biggie Langston. Do you remember what Jerry Lawler said? That was hilarious.
Yeah.
That was so funny. And what's even funnier is there was a thing on Yahoo not too long ago that Andy Kaufman is still alive. He faked his death. And so that just kind of sheds more light on it. But I pick up on what Jerry Lawler says a lot of times, and I even quote that stuff here. Jerry Lawler is the absolute funniest, genius, criminal mind of wrestling. And I'll keep that going. But, yeah, Curtis Axel versus Biggie Langston. He's a great Intercontinental Champion. I don't want to say great. He's a good one. So the title deserves to be around his waist. Curtis Axel, who's he? See you later.
Absolutely. Again, longest U.S. champion in WWE history. All right, so the next match we have is the Total Divas against the not Total Divas, or AJ Lee called them the True Divas. Ladies and gentlemen, yeah. So I'll try. I have to, you know, proper commentary. I'm gonna do the best I can and give you the pancakes and power slams commentary here.
Good luck.
Okay. Right. I have to squeeze blood from a turnip here. But okay. So here's a high spot. Okay. Well, I guess I can pull out two high spots. One is Natalya continued to get her fair due. I'm glad that they're still continuing to push Natalya, and you know she hasn't been Divas champion in 3 years, so it's about that time. She's the best wrestler on the roster, the best wrestler on the WWE roster. Divas roster, without question. I mean, there's no
right.
Dispute to that. And then second, I was actually a fan of JoJo's work. Now, I think, you know, for her to be so young, 19, and just really coming in the gate and being so young. I mean, you know, the girl's 19 years old, and just really seeing the passion that she has. I mean, she has so much potential. She's only 19 years old. Just imagine when she gets 35 years old, it would be 2029. I mean, like, that's just, wow. She's so young, and she has so much more time to go, and they can really hone the Divas division around JoJo, you know, in the years to come. She's beautiful, you know. She has the look. She's small, but at the same time, I think she can atone that for her athletic ability. And playing the underdog when Tamina was in, that was really good. And I think, you know, the moves that she did, the bumps that she took, really showed that she was putting some work in, that she's been putting some work in, and that she's passionate enough to know that, you know, she's in it to win it. And like I've said before in previous shows, I believe that Eva Marie is just in for the fame and for the paycheck and to get movie roles or to get Maxim shoots or you know, things of that nature. I don't see a long haul with Eva Marie. I do see a long haul with JoJo. So kudos to that. So those two things I can pull out of what we saw at Survivor Series on Sunday. Other than that, nothing. Just a bunch of botched spots. The worst person in the entire match on Sunday was, without a doubt, Rosa Mendez. She was just an embarrassment. And, you know, at least I pulled two good things out of it.
Well, at least he can do that. I don't think anyone else really put that much thought into it. Good job, Chris.
Well, it's my job to do that.
And he is very good at it. He kept his eyes open long enough to really examine that and give at least a 2-minute synopsis on it. Yeah. So, great. It's like watching the Kardashians or something. It's mindless, boring drivel. So, Wendy Richter back in the day, she wasn't a supermodel. She could put on a good show. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, that Wendy Richter, Rockin' Robin, those
Rockin' Robin did the worst Star-Spangled Banner in the history of WrestleMania. WrestleMania 5 wasn't Rockin' Robin. Wasn't that horrible? That was a train wreck.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Trump Plaza. Yeah. Yikes. It was bad. Yeah. Kudos to the memories of Rockin' Robin singing in the Star. Well, actually, kudos to the memories, but no kudos to the actual singing. That was awful. But Natalya and Nikki were the survivors of that match. Next we have Ryback with his open challenge. And many, you know, there were many kind of rumors going around saying that it was going to be Sheamus coming back early from his injury. But there was also a report of Mark Henry taking a flight to Boston. So it looked like between those two, it ended up being Mark Henry. And it was good to see him back. Still, you know, Mark Henry, he's paid his dues. He deserves to be a world champion. And before we saw what we saw at the end of Raw, I actually reported on Bleacher Report that, you know, there were some sources that said that Mark Henry was next in line to have a WWE championship feud with Orton. A short one, but a few nonetheless, but they're doing the whole, you know, two championship thing. So, you know, I'm trying to see what they're going to do with Mark Henry. But interestingly enough, I'm telling you, hey, listen, cravewrestling@gmail.com. I am the booking extraordinaire. If you want to hire me to book for your independent promotion, cravewrestling@gmail.com. I called it. I called Biggie Langston and Mark Henry as a tag team, and we'll talk a little about that on Raw. But as far as Survivor Series is concerned, I mean, the match was slow. The thing is with Mark Henry, as intimidating as he is and how much, you know, and the tenure that he has, he looks much better. He's lost weight. He got rid of those, you know, fake kinky twist dreads looking locks, whatever it was. It wasn't even his hair. But
dreads were awesome.
Yeah, and
they weren't his.
You know,
are
got,
you serious?
They were like extensions or, you know, weave or whatever. But yeah, I mean, if you look at pictures, you'll see that they braided those locks in his real hair. But yeah, or
well,
they were just more. There weren't even really locks. They were just kind of like twists. But yeah, it was
Booker
odd.
T's fake.
No, Booker T's is all the way real. We'll talk about that more. As far as Booker T is concerned, still really funny on the kickoff panel, the Hall of Fame panel with Mick Foley and Bret Hart. Yeah, he did. Decent. Bret Hart just looks like he always just looks like he don't want to be there, and he's always
kind of
looks
a jerk
like,
that way.
Yeah, he just has that bitter look to him now. That's like, whatever. You know, I need the money, and that's what
you
I saw.
Shawn Michaels over me.
Yeah. It is. It's like that's what I see. What I see, Bret Hart. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. You know, he deserves every moment of his Hall of Fame induction.
He does.
One of the best of all time, for sure. But he just looks bitter, you know. I was talking about that on Sunday at Survivor Series with my colleagues. He just looks bitter, you know. But Henry and Ryback was slow. I was glad when it was over. Mark Henry's one of those people that he needs someone good to work with, and Ryback definitely is not the option for that.
No, not at all. I mean, Ryback just looked like a ridiculous noodle out there. He was just picks on the Hall of Famers. Mark Henry comes out with his bald head and his beard. Is his beard extensions? I hope not. But decent match. I'm glad Mark Henry won. I'm tired of Ryback. Feeding wars way over. That's never going to happen again. And it's just, I mean, he's a tool for the WWE. He's a filler. Ryback is a filler. That's what he is.
Yeah, he is. And if they really want to pump up Ryback for, and the thing is, they're still, you know, teasing, you know, either him and Brock Lesnar or him and Goldberg, depending on who, you know, says yes for WrestleMania 30. Honestly, I still think either one of them will work if they pump up Ryback enough, but Ryback is just an afterthought. I mean, he's failed every time. They just can't do anything constructive with Ryback. He's just a failed, speaking of failed project, he also is a failed project. Next, we go to John Cena versus Alberto Del Rio. That match actually was a disappointment, too, because John Cena and Alberto Del Rio has actually put on some good matches over their series of matches over the past 2 years. They've put on some good matches. They had a match on Raw recently. The match after when John Cena won it at when he won it at Hell in a Cell, the match after Hell in a Cell, the Raw after Hell in a Cell was a pretty good match. But this match, it was a snoozer to me. I wasn't impressed whatsoever, and I really, really hope that we don't see Alberto Del Rio, and it seems like they're going to migrate into a Del Rio and Big Show feud, which I still don't care about.
Yeah, I don't care about either. I thought Big Show, either he was going to get fired or he was going to sue the WWE, so what's going on with that? As far as Cena goes, I like what they're doing with him, even though I don't want to see the unified championships or whatever they're going to do with that, because we don't know what they're going to do yet. We do not know what they're going to do with that yet. But as far as Monday Night Raw and Survivor Series goes, I mean, they couldn't have ended much better. I mean, I know this Del Rio and Cena, that was like a mid-card, so there's a few more matches to go. But I am impressed with the WWE as far as what they're doing with the titles. After that, yeah. I think it was Brian and Punk against the Wyatts, so we'll go into that. Chris Featherstone, tell us all about it.
Absolutely. It was Daniel Bryan and CM Punk defeating Eric Rowan and Luke Harper. I actually was a little bit surprised about this because I was thinking that Bray Wyatt would cost Daniel Bryan and CM Punk a win that leads into their a match at TLC.
It would have made more sense.
Yeah, it would have, but it was just a regular tag team win with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. So the match was good. Don't get me wrong on that. The match was good. I still don't have that much stock in Eric Rowan and Luke Harper. Now, the Wyatt family is centered around Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt is the money maker of the Wyatt family group. Now, you have the, brawly, weird-looking, trailer-looking, intimidating, kind of primitive-looking, Eric Rowan and Luke Harper. And I understand that, and I understand how they're so massive and just his kind of his backbone, so to speak. But just centering feuds around them, no. I don't think it's a good idea. And we saw that. We've seen that. Daniel Bryan and CM Punk has helped the Wyatt family tremendously. With centering a feud, having the at SummerSlam, having a tag team match with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk against Eric Rowan and Luke Harper, I didn't think it was a good idea to place on the second oldest and one of the top, one of the big four pay-per-views. Wasn't a really good idea to me. But the match was good, but at the same time, it left my head scratching of what they're going to do after Rowan and Harper losing.
Yeah, it's, what was that? Down. It's got that Deliverance feel to it. It's kind of weird. And, yeah, I can see you can't really center anything around those two because you got Bray Wyatt. He is the forefront of that group, and he's really hasn't done anything. You've got his two henchmen. Yeah, they're weird, but after you get past the weirdness, they don't really have a whole lot to offer. So, and you got the Bryan and Punk. I mean, they make a good team. That's exciting to see, but it's kind of sad in a way because these two, a few months ago, had so much things better going for them in their future. And now, okay, we're tag team partners because they don't have anything else to do with us. We've run our course. We'll put them up against the Wyatts and see what happens. That's what I pretty much got from the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, let's see what TLC brings here in a few weeks. Randy Orton defeats Big Show. I mean, this was predictable. Like I said, Big Show's not going to. It was bad. The match wasn't even that good. There was a couple spots, outside that were decent, but this was probably one of the most predictable main events in the entire year. If not the most predictable main event in the entire year, because Big Show, and I've said this before, Big Show just he will not lay a finger on the WWE Championship. He's at the twilight of his career, and he's just not going to be WWE Champion. And they had the nerve to try to say, "Yeah, I haven't been champion in 10 years." Okay, and you won't be champion in 10 more years. They just tried their best to try to milk every little nook and cranny of trying to make this angle relevant and anticipating, and it wasn't either. And it won't be, and they need to just get away from it, and it looks like they will. Raw presented something a little bit more interesting, but I still have no, you know, interest at all with Big Show being in the title scene. Of course, we'll talk about Raw and how that changed up. But John Cena coming out at the end, I actually thought, and here's the thing, this is one thing that could have been a complete swerve for a major pay-per-view, which they should pull big swerves, turns, title changes, things like that, and we didn't get any of that. But the swerve that I thought could have possibly happened, because we saw John Cena in the locker room earlier in the show after his match with Del Rio, and then we saw John Cena come out at the end of the show, and he was standing, you know, next to Triple H and Stephanie. Now, what would have really been a swerve is if John Cena would have played to the crowd, would have hit Randy Orton with his World Heavyweight Championship, and he would have been the newest member of the Authority. Now, that heel turn would have worked. And I've told many people, I don't see John Cena. I mean, John Cena turning heel wouldn't mean anything. I mean, you can't compare him to the Hogan heel turn. You just can't, because he already has so much heat now, currently, that when he turns heel, he'll just get more heat. And knowing how the new age WWE crowd is, he might even get more pops by turning heel. So you can't compare that to a Hogan heel turn. It won't be some drastic, you know, from cheers, mega cheers, larger-than-life Hulk Hogan to villainous, you know, black-bearded, you know, heel Hulk Hogan. It just won't happen. But it would have garnered some heat, and it would have been a really good swerve and a really nice heel turn if John Cena would have aligned himself with the Authority.
Hey, you think so? I don't think John Cena being turning heel would make much difference if he was face. He's been heel so many times, been face so many times. I don't really think that, at least for me, it wouldn't have made an impact at all. Okay, John Cena's heel again, big deal. I just think it was a total waste of a match. You're right about Big Show. He doesn't... Doggone it. Something's got to happen for that guy, but it's just not going to happen. And for someone like Randy Orton just to soak up all the energy and the heat from that match, he kicked the Big Show in the head and the Big Show went down. That was it. 1, 2, 3. Randy Orton's still champion. And, of course, he had the Big Show was distracted by Triple H and Stephanie coming out. The music plays. Stupid end to a match. It was not a good end to a match. It was a predictable, are you kidding me, one of those walking away from it. For crying out loud, WWE, that's typical. Survivor Series, do something a little more special. I walked away. It was like the last two or three pay-per-views they've had.
Yeah. They need to do something different. Royal Rumble's going to be a reset. Royal Rumble's always a fun and exciting pay-per-view to watch just because of the unpredictability. That's one of the only pay-per-views other than Money in the Bank of, you know, a level of unpredictability, and that's what we need. That draws suspense. That's what, you know, makes people unglued. Just really glued to their chairs and then eventually unglued by the reaction. But that's what we need. We need the level of unpredictability, and they've been doing such a horrible job with that. And, of course, we saw that with Randy Orton and Big Show. All right, let's get to Raw. We don't have much time here. Randy Orton in-ring promo brings out Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. John Cena comes out, challenges Orton in a title versus title match, and then Triple H books Cena and Orton in a TLC match for both titles. We've talked about that enough as far as the unification of how we feel about it. Shield defeats Rey Mysterio, Cody Rhodes, and Goldust. Another fantastic moment for Roman Reigns. Then we get Miz TV, Michael Strahan, and pretending to be Titus O'Neil. Well, Titus O'Neil pretending to be Michael Strahan, and then the real Michael Strahan comes out. That was just such a lousy segment. It was boring. It was just ridiculous, and I have no idea why they actually thought that the WWE Universe would be interested in any second of that.
I flipped the Monday Night Football. I mean, that's it was absolutely ridiculous. Why? That was horrible. I would expect to see something like that on TNA.
Yeah. Yeah, they're TNA's too big for that. And that's
exactly.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. Then we had Mark Henry and Biggie Langston defeats Curtis Axel and Ryback. I mean, hey, I suppose you put Axel and Ryback together as a tag team. I think that may help them. I mean, this isn't – they're teaming them two up a little bit more now. And to help the tag team division, it would work. I think it would be a decent tag team. I'm not a fan of either one of them. But I think, you know, maybe we can see an eventual Ryback face turn from being with Axel – you know, after a while, and maybe that'll lead Brock Lesnar come in and Axel, you know, saying he is a Paul Heyman guy after all, and something could happen for that. But Mark Henry and Biggie Langston, it looked pretty good as a team. And the only thing I have about this, and I think from what I said before, I think they can book it right. They need to shine Biggie Langston. Biggie Langston needs to be the one that shines in this tag team, because although we're like, you know, Mark Henry paid his dues, you know, he's been world champion before. So Biggie Langston needs this moment. Now, so I think, again, I think the best thing to do would be to have them team up for a little while, and eventually Mark Henry pulls the heel turn. It leads to a match at WrestleMania. That would be a really good spot for the both of them.
It'd be a good spot for the both of them. Biggie Langston, he's on a platform right now. He's really got to prove what he's going to do. He was the best thing to ever happen. Axel Ryback, because I don't think even a Ryback face turn, I'm not interested in that, not at all. Axel, he's a Paul Heyman guy, but if he wants to be or not, that's up to him, or it's up to WWE. What's next? Divas match was
yeah.
next. What's after that?
Speaking of Dean Ambrose, we again the research team was supposed to pull up some information, and it did. Dean Ambrose has defended the title 6 times. It looks like from the information I'm getting here, 6 times. And
wow, that's
from,
pretty good.
From what? No, I mean he won the title in May, so that's what? Not that's not good from May at all. He won the match. He beat Kofi Kingston at Extreme Rules on May 18th. So it looks like, well, actually a little bit more times that the information I'm getting from. Looks like 11 times from the information I'm getting. It says that he...
11 times? Are you guys serious? He messed that up.
It was a rematch from SmackDown, the information I'm receiving here. A rematch from SmackDown, on SmackDown for the championship, and then again a Kingston or Raw, but it was a month after that, a payback. He defeated Kane by count out, and then, you know, it was just kind of just pay-per-views after that. Went against Kane again, and then so it, like, kind of like once or twice a month, like the pay-per-view and then the respective Raw or SmackDown afterwards. But there was a span as far as television defenses, because there was one in June that he did after Payback, and he didn't defend it again until SummerSlam, so 2 months. And so that's the problem. And then a month after that, at Night of Champions, and then, you know, on SmackDown, and then a couple matches with Ziggler that were unsuccessful for Ziggler. But, yeah, not enough defenses, not enough showcasing, and then Biggie Langston on Hell in a Cell and Raw. And Biggie Langston won both times by
we did some house
count out
shows,
the first.
You got to count the house shows.
No.
You can't count. There's like 25 house shows where he defended the title, so good job, Ambrose.
Yeah, or not so good job, because
good
those
job,
are house shows. That's the whole point of house shows, to showcase, you know, some type of, you know, you're paying for something because they're not going to be on TV. So that's the reason, and that's the reason why I think they should keep the World Heavyweight Championship as well, because that's defended on house shows. That's like the marquee thing for house shows, and in many occasions. So we'll get to more in depth as far as the unification of the titles and see how that pans out on TLC. Then we get the Total Divas versus the True Divas again. I mean, again, they win because the Total Divas are not going to lose because of the show. So now this time the Bella Twins and Eva Marie are soul survivors. I have no idea why they decided to have Eva Marie be a soul survivor. Another gimmick match between Damian Sandow and Dolph Ziggler in the Hampton Hardcore match. It was actually a pretty good match again, and Damian Sandow won this time. So we'll probably see a rubber match at TLC. Which I'm cool with, and I think, again, this is a good feud. This is a good mid-card feud, but it should be for the U.S. title.
Should be for the U.S. title, Sandow and Ziggler. I mean, they're two powerful opponents, and I like both of them. I think Sandow's a lot to prove with the WWE, and as far as Ziggler as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of them are really good. Then we saw CM Punk and Daniel Bryan Emmering. Well, it's supposed to be an interview, but it wasn't really an interview. It was more a promo between the two, because Renee Young didn't do anything. And I think even CM Punk made a mention, or Daniel Bryan made mention of that, one of them. And then Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, they go against the Wyatt family. Referee calls the match because there's a bunch of commotion, and he couldn't control it. And then the Wyatts take Daniel Bryan, and the Shield attacks CM Punk and puts him in a triple powerbomb. That does present an interesting twist to what we're seeing. Now, I was thinking, okay, so maybe they'll abandon Daniel Bryan to try to make him a member of the Wyatt family, and then does Daniel Bryan actually become a member? I've been thinking about that for months now as far as Daniel Bryan being a potential member of the Wyatt family. I don't think that would help him. If he made any type of heel turn, if he was reluctantly a member, possibly, if he lost a match and was forced to be a member of the Wyatt family, okay, that possibly could happen, something to that nature. But a heel turn from Daniel Bryan, being a member of the Wyatt family, I wouldn't be okay with that. As far as the CM Punk and the Shield is concerned, that's also something I'm pretty interested in as far as how they are they still going to team up, CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, but now you're dealing with the Shield and the Wyatt family. Is the Shield and the Wyatt family going to have some commotion? Which I'm not a big fan of heel versus heel factions. You know, that's not really a big moneymaker. So, you know, we'll see what this leads to, but it's a bit convoluted, and hopefully they do something good with what we saw on Raw. It has potential, but they've screwed up many things that have potential. But just hope for once that this doesn't get screwed up.
If it gets screwed up, I mean, that's to be expected. I don't really think the WWE is going to harness on this. I think it was just kind of thrown together, and I don't see Bryan being not at all. He will not be a member of the Wyatts. I do not see that happening. It was just kind of thrown together at the last minute, and that's just what Monday Night Raw's kind of become lately. not always going to be what Monday Night Raw is, but lately, no, I don't see that happening at all. What was the next match? Kofi and The Miz.
Next match, Kofi and Miz, before we get there, the longest reigning U.S. champion in the WWE was MVP. The next question is, who is the longest reigning U.S. champion in history, in the history of the title?
Lex
and Luger. I was waiting for one Derek trivia blurt.
Was that right?
What happened. Yeah, you were right.
Yes! Lex Luger! Woo!
No love for the chat room. No love for the tweet.
I had to do that because I just blurted it out, and that was the right answer.
It was. There is your blurt
for
the week.
I could have said anybody, but I said the right answer because I know. That's how much I care.
You care too much. You care so much that you selfishly answer the trivia questions, and you say, "Oh man, you know what? I'm gonna blurt it out because
room for
whatever."
More. Let's get some more trivia questions. What's next?
All right, the next trivia question is: This is more fun than Raw or Survivor Series, that's for sure. How many official world title reigns does Ric Flair have? So, oh goodness,
16 times world champion Ric Flair.
This is turned into a quiz Derek show.
Oh, no.
You know what? As a matter of fact, let's do that. Spontaneous pancakes and power slams, real quick before we go to the rest of Raw and Flavor of the Week here in a minute. Who is the shortest reigning WWE champion of all time?
I gotta think about it.
Now. No blurt for that. Next question. What was that?
I said chat room. Yokozuna. Yokozuna.
Yoko, no.
Are you serious?
I'm gonna get my pancakes and power slams buzzer and bell coming up here, and we're gonna have the staff have a little bit more technology here, but that was wrong. That was absolutely wrong.
Oh, you're fired.
But no, I do the hiring and firing here. But next we'll go to The Miz against Kofi Kingston. Again, really Raw was really Survivor Series part 2.0. I mean, it really was. I wasn't interested in Miz and Kofi Kingston. It wasn't a horrible match, but again, I just, so be it. Miz and Kofi Kingston, Miz wins. Again.
Yokozuna was in the top three.
Sure. Yokozuna was actually the second shortest WWE champion of all time. Yes.
Who am I missing?
I'll say it in a minute. Miz and Kofi Kingston, nothing on Miz and Kofi Kingston. Going once, going twice. All right, Xavier Woods defeating Heath Slater. I like Xavier Woods' work. They gave him the Brodus Clay music. There was some reports going on today at wrestling.com that said people backstage are wondering about Brodus Clay's future. So does that mean that he is going to be weaned out and eventually released? Or does that mean that he's going to become a heel and feud against Xavier Woods? Now, if Brodus Clay became a heel, as much as I was okay with the initial Brodus Clay, when he came back as a face, I was like, okay, this is absolutely weird, but it ended up working. You know, the whole Funkasaurus thing, it ended up working. Because, you know, monster heels have a short shelf life. I mean, they do. You can't just bring in a monster heel these days and expect them to really work the way, an Andre the Giant. Well, he didn't even debut as a monster heel. He was a face for a great part of his career, and you know, but he turned a little bit before WrestleMania 3 with Bobby Heenan. So, I mean, but you bring in these monster heels. Kane lasted for you know, he's lasted throughout the whole time, but he didn't stay heel long. But there's other monster heels that you bring in that really, you know, didn't have a long shelf life. Jackson Andrews was one of them that was managed by Tyson Kidd. Eli Cottonwood, I mean, they tried to do something with him in NXT, but not so much. So, Brodus Clay is a monster heel. I'm not interested, but at least he would do better than what the Funkadactyls, or not the Funkadactyls, they're actually doing pretty good, but Tons of Funk, him and Tensai, him turning heel would be better than what they're currently doing, and it would boost up Xavier Woods, so I suppose that might be a better option right now.
Yeah, it'd be a better option. I never had much of an opinion on Funkadactyls and all that good stuff, so it really doesn't have a whole lot to do with me. So, yeah, what's coming up next? I know we're kind of running out of time. We could go 6 hours on this topic, ladies and gentlemen, or at least the topic of professional wrestling. Let's keep the ball rolling. What's up?
Main event, John Cena and Big Show against Alberto Del Rio and Randy Orton. Again,
yes.
Survivor Series 2.0 in tag team style. And there were some reports that just talked about how the third hour took a drastic drop in the ratings and the viewers, and I can absolutely see that, because who would be excited of a John Cena Big Show against Alberto Del Rio and Randy Orton main event? I mean, I don't see anybody who would be excited about that. And you know, they won. Cena and Big Show won, and then at the end, Del Rio unsuccessfully attacked Cena, and then Orton hits him with the WWE title and grabs the world title and celebrates with both belts, leading it to TLC. This absolutely did nothing for me.
It did nothing. In a way, though, I do like how the WWE kind of put the two titles together. They're going to put them together. Curious to see what are they going to do after this happens. But the Monday Night Raw, I like how you say it's Survivor Series 2.0. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Nothing big from there. From Raw as a whole, it wasn't satisfying whatsoever. All right, real quick, Impact Wrestling, Turning Point. Magnus defeats Samoa Joe. Joseph Park and Abyss leads to the Abyss not even coming out, getting mocked by Bad Influence. Gail Kim defeating Candice LeRae. Bobby Roode and James Storm in Florida Death Match. Made James Storm look weak, actually, at the end of that. Gunner comes out and throws in a towel. Maybe a heel turn with one of them. Ethan Carter III defeats Shark Boy. Get to see Shark Boy back. That's Derek's boy.
Shark Boy, I love Shark Boy.
Absolutely. And Mr. Anderson defeats Bully Ray, and Aces and Eights finally disband. SmackDown, did it in a different order this week. But as far as SmackDown, it was just leading to Survivor Series. Rose Brothers versus the Real Americans. Defeating Real Americans, that was actually a really good match. And as far as anything else, check out wrestling.com and the SmackDown review that I do every week, and I also do Impact Wrestling review. Daniel Bryan defeats Luke Harper at the end, the main event. And as far as always is concerned, great product. I mean, just good. The wrestling was absolutely phenomenal. Matt Taven defeats Zach Gowen. Jay Briscoe defeats Silas Young, and at the end, the main event was Jay Lethal defeating Eddie Edwards, which was a fantastic match. Fantastic match. And it's always, and always does my heart well to see a Jay Lethal win, because he's my favorite wrestler in ROH. All right, let's go to the flavor of the week. The as a matter of fact, the answer to the question of who is the shortest reigning WWE champion of all time, if you remember on an episode of The Main Event back in 1988, there was a little controversy that happened where
Andre the Giant
defeated Hulk Hogan. And
Million Dollar Man
immediately
bought the title.
Turned it over to Million Dollar
that
Man.
That doesn't count.
No, it does. It does. It is considered.
Trick question.
It's not a trick question because it is considered an official WWE championship reign. It is considered an official WWE championship reign. Andre the Giant is a former WWE champion officially. And, but however, Ted DiBiase's reign is not an official reign, but Andre the Giant's is. So Andre the Giant gets the rub of being former world heavyweight champion, but unfortunately, the shortest in WWE history. All right, real quick, flavor of the week here. We got about 7 or 8 minutes to. Talk about our favorite teams. I'm going to be quick. Five teams, Attitude Era. Derek, what five you have and what's so significant about them?
Oh, five I have. Almost our Hardy Boys. They were the extreme tag team. They really brought the tables, ladders, and chairs into the match. They made the tag team division of WWE so absolutely awesome. You also have the New Age Outlaws. They were the Generation X. They, you didn't know? They brought all that out. That was so much fun. Well, you better call somebody. Who can forget that? Absolutely awesome. You got the ENC connection. Edge and Christian, along with the Hardy Boys, brought just the extreme division to WWE. Hardcore division. WWE Attitude was absolutely phenomenal. Then you have the Rock and Sock connection. They were a tag team. You have Mick Foley. You have The Rock. You can't get much better than that. You've got exactly. Argue with me on that. And then after that, I kind of want to give a shout-out to the Headbangers. The Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher, were cutting edge as far as they came. They kind of came before the Hardy Boys and the Edge and Christian. They kind of set the tone. They feuded with DX for a quick while before DX became the four-member group of Triple H and New Age Outlaws back when it was still Shawn Michaels was there. So those five, Hardy Boys, New Age Outlaws, Rock and Sock, and the Headbangers, they've got my full support.
Well, you named six. You said the Headbangers was a shout out. So what's your five again? You said
the Headbangers were my five.
Yeah, they were. Okay, yeah, you're right. Hardys, Edge and Christian, New Age Outlaws, Rock and Sock Connection, and Headbangers. Okay, great. Awesome five there. It goes to show how much the Attitude Era just shined of those tag teams, because I have four of those five tag teams. I have every one that you mentioned except for the Headbangers. So I'm going to start off with the Hardy Boys. They had their evolution of just being some really, small kid team, having just really being jobbers. If you looked back before they became actually someone, when Michael Hayes ended up managing them, and I think Terry Reynolds managed them for a hot second as well. And then they became Team Extreme with Lita. That really helped them, and that really propelled them with, the ladder matches and the TLC matches and things of that nature. And the next team is Edge and Christian. And it's what's so interesting about Edge and Christian is that they were just kind of a makeshift tag team initially.
Yeah.
It appeared to be that way. They were with
the
Brood.
Over.
Yeah, they did. They were with the Brood. They were just two members of the Brood, and they came out of the Brood and had their own tag team. And I don't know if they were purposed to be that successful. They were one of the best teams in the Attitude Era, by far. Multiple tag team reigns, and won all the matches. The TLC matches that they participated in. And, well, just about all of them. And they just were an amazing, amazing tag team. And so with the benefit of those with flash photography, just awesome. Just
5 second
you
pose.
Think, five second pose. You think you know me. Theme music. Fantastic, fantastic team. I also have the New Age Outlaws with Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. Interestingly enough, they joined DX. They were with, it was Jesse James and, Rockabilly, kind of morphing into Billy Gunn, and it became, B.A. Billy Gunn, and just and it worked. It really worked. The only thing I didn't like about the New Age Outlaws is how they just sabotaged the Road Warriors or the Legion of Doom. It's a big difference to me. I still say the Road Warriors is straight up NWA, rugged, no nonsense, intimidating, way before their time, just very just gigantic, larger than life tag team to me. LOD, they would call each other the Legion of Doom, the Road Warriors. But interestingly enough, I don't know a lot of people know this. The Legion of Doom was initially more than them. I don't know. I think you may know this, but with King Kong Bundy and Jake Roberts were all in the Legion of Doom. But they kind of became the Legion of Doom themselves and the Road Warriors, and then they became the Legion of Doom officially in the WWE. Like, they weren't even called the Road Warriors. And the Legion of Doom WWE version, just even in 92, I think it was 92 when they went against the Nasty Boys.
91.
The title. 91. When they went against when they went against the Nasty Boys, and when they won the titles around that time too, just even that run wasn't very impressive. And really, the 97.
They didn't have Paul Ellering.
They did have Paul Ellering because they all came in motorcycles, and
for a short while they did, but not for the long run.
Not for long. Especially in the latter run, the Attitude Era run, they were with Ellering, but Ellering even turned on them and managed
the
DOA.
Of Apocalypse.
Yeah. They joined the DOA, Disciples of Apocalypse, and that was just horrible. And then when they did the debacle of and then the alcohol took over for Hawk, and the Sunny thing with Jaws, that was just horrible. And just the angle what they did with Hawk and falling off the Titantron and the alcohol, that
he
was
fell
just
2 feet off the Titantron to commit suicide.
That was just so embarrassing for him, man. I wasn't a fan of it at all, and unfortunately that's the reason why I can't put them. They're my all-time favorite tag team. They're the best team on the planet in the history of professional wrestling to me, but just their WWE run was so embarrassing. So New Age Outlaws definitely put in there. Rock and Sock Connection, you're absolutely right. Just another makeshift tag team that just became more successful than expected. A very fun tag team. It was the much better version of Team Hell No to me. Just two, main event wrestlers, former world champions, put together in a comedic fashion that really sword and really did a fantastic job. And then my last team is none other than the Dudley Boys. They really honed the tag team division with the Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian at that time, with the ladder matches that they did at SummerSlam and a couple at WrestleMania. And I think that the Dudley Boys, even with their ECW roots, brought that bridge over to the WWE to really bring a better element of extreme to the WWE at that time. So I definitely think they are worth recognizing as one of the five highlights of the tag team division in Attitude Era. So fantastic job as always, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to wrap this show up. And again, hopefully we'll have a better TLC, but we are at episode 87. We are 13 more episodes away from episode 100, and going further towards 100, we're going to have some great news for you. Got some fantastic information. Again, we also have our review, our year review, our New Year's show. And we'll just stay tuned for that. We'll do a history of Flavor of the Week, so it's going to be really fun. And until next week, I mean, just continue to support Crave Wrestling. Continue to support Pancakes and Power Slams. 87 episodes. So thankful for everyone for us staying on the air consistently since, you know, for the past, 17 months.
April of 2012.
It's been 19 months. It was April of 2012. So we've been on the air for 19 months. So thankful for you all. So thankful for all of your almost 20. It'll be December here next week. So approaching 2 years. Wow. So thankful. Approaching 2 years on the air, weekly radio. So thankful for you all so much. Continue to support Crave Wrestling. Follow Crave Wrestling at Crave Wrestling on Twitter. Check out my articles on Bleacher Report. My apologies for missing a Retro Wednesday. I think that's the first one I missed in like 6 months. I had a lot of things going on last Wednesday, but I will make it up to you this Wednesday, Retro Wednesday. And tweet me and with your ideas, or cravewrestling@gmail.com with your topics. If I haven't came up with one already, I will consider some and give you credit for it. Of course, check my articles out on Bleacher Report. I'm a featured columnist there. And until then, of course, shout out to Derek, our Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. He's just been my ace, my right-hand man, and just really continues to be one of the driving force behind the creativity and the success of this program. I'm very, very thankful with all of his actual pro wrestling expertise, and he's been in the ring, he's been in the ropes, and so I'm so thankful. So continue to support us, cravewrestling@gmail.com. If you want to book me for anything, or even Derek, absolutely. He deserves it as well. So until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.